Sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everybody. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to another episode of Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. That means you, your personal sexuality, and your personal happiness. And as far as I'm concerned, they're intimately connected. And hopefully you're finding that out by listening to the show. So many of you have written to me and said that you're growing in your sex and in your happiness, and that makes me feel terrific because that makes me grow in my sex and happiness. So it's reciprocal. And today's show will not be any kind of a disappointment for you as far as I'm concerned. The first part of the show, we're going to be talking about what it is to write erotica. I personally am completely interested in this because I just started writing erotica, and I've written 2.5 stories. And I'm really excited about it. It gives me another opportunity to explore my sexuality, my turn-on, my orgasm, which I own. My own turn-on, having nothing whatsoever to do with anyone else, even though my stories have to do with others and involvement with others. This is something that's emoting from me. So I'm going to be interviewing right now Rachel Kramer-Bussell, who is an erotic writer, and who she is the editor of over 50 anthologies, including The Big Book of Orgasms, Baby Got Back, Anal Erotica, Serving Him, Sexy Stories of Submission, Cheeky Spanking Stories, Best Bondage Erotica 2013, and Best Sex Writing 2013. She writes widely about sex and pop culture and tweets at Recolita. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Rachel. I'm very curious about your half of the story that you have written.
Well, that's a good place to start. I just started writing it. It's about exploring a different lifestyle, like swinging lifestyle, exploring what it is to join forces with another couple or another couple people, couple three people, and seeing what that's like for a person who has never done anything like that before. So that's what my half a story is. You know, I have just started writing it. I haven't really. It hasn't crystallized for me yet. But all my stories are based on either personal fantasy or a personal fantasy that I've played out. So
I like that. And I also think a lot of people, you know, you can definitely write erotica with two people, but I think when you bring more than two people into it, it can, you know, it changes the interactions that are going on.
So you mean like writing about like two people exploring versus four people exploring or three people exploring?
Yeah, I mean, it can be trickier to write about more than two people because there's more, just more action involved than who's doing what. I've written and read and edited erotica about not everything at this point, but a lot of different things. So sometimes, you know, I like to bring in extra people to make it a little bit different. So I'm curious about that.
Well, that's how people feel, I guess, when they're swinging. So they want like to bring in extra people to watch or extra people to suck toes or whatever it is that they're doing. And I feel to write about it. And I'd love to share my things with you. So we could talk about that later. You know, I would absolutely love to share my things with you because your little resume here in terms of, you know, best bondage erotica 2013 and best sex writing 2013. I mean, obviously you are somebody in the world of writing erotica And that's what attracted me to you and wanted me to interview you, especially your newest book, The Big Book of Orgasms. That's my main love. Like, I think everybody should have as many orgasms a day as they brush their teeth.
I love that.
You know, at a minimum.
Yeah. I've been writing erotica for a long time, since 1999. No, is that right? Yeah, that's right. And it's funny because I definitely did not set out to be writing it for such a long time. It was sort of a whim. And at the time, there was a call for submissions. And I just want to make sure I can say, can I say a curse word on your show?
Yes.
F word? Okay. I mean, I'm not going to be cursing up a storm, but the book was called Starfucker. And it was edited by Shar Rednauer, and it was about sex with celebrities. And this is 1999, so at the time, Monica Lewinsky was really big in the news, and I was following her story because I was really fascinated by her, and I had a crush on her, but I also, you know, felt bad for her because she was, people were just saying really horrible things about her. And I used all of that to write this story called Monica and Me, which was about a character based on me who goes to a book signing and Monica's there and they have this fling. And it was really fun to write because it took this fantasy, but since it was about a real person, I had actual facts I could use, like the lipstick that she wore on her Barbara Walters interview and different little things about her. And I've pretty much been writing erotica since then, since that first story.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, when I hear you say that, my fantasy immediately goes to, wouldn't it be wonderful if Monica Lewinsky knew,
you know,
that she inspired you to have a whole new career?
Well, I don't know if she knows that, but she actually does know about the story because through a long story, but I met someone I dated because of that story who wound up meeting Monica and telling her there was this story. So, and she apparently wasn't bothered by it. I wouldn't have voluntarily told her about it because that's a little awkward maybe. But I think, you know, it's interesting when you're writing about a celebrity, the idea of what makes a celebrity attractive. And I teach erotic writing workshops at various places. And sometimes I give that as an assignment to write a story involving a celebrity because I think part of it is about our idea of what that celebrity is like and our fantasy about them. And then I think there's this curiosity as to whether, you know, is their sex life so outrageous and amazing and wonderful? Like, is it so heightened because their life is so kind of grandiose, or is it just like everyone else's? And I think that when you write about a celebrity or someone, you know, somewhat famous or known, the reader can relate to it because they know who that person is. It's not a character totally made up, even though you're projecting your own idea of them onto the page. So I think that can be a fun thing to play with.
Totally. I didn't even think like that, but I think that's, you know, now I'm going to work on who I would fantasize about as a celebrity. And I wanted to say also before, I don't think much would bother Monica Lewinsky. You know, like, I think that she put herself in that position because she also had some intentions. And I think that she, you know, whether she looked at herself from time to time and said, Monica, what are you doing? Do you really want to go this far? I just think that she probably got over it and said, nothing's going to bother me. I'm in pursuit of fame. I'm in pursuit of this person, this president. I'm in pursuit, whatever. I'm in pursuit of my own power and my own goals. That's my fantasy about her. So I think that finding out about you writing about her, how could that do anything but like feed her what she was looking for?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I agree that she was necessarily looking for that fame, but I do think that she was playing out her own celebrity fantasy.
Sure.
And
No question.
Interesting because when I do this exercise with classes, some people will pick really famous celebrities, Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt or someone of that level of fame. But sometimes people will pick not as well-known celebrities or known in a subculture. And I think it's really interesting, the idea of who's famous, because someone could have really ardent fans. And to them, It might be like meeting the Beatles or something. You know, it might mm-hmm. be the epitome of fame, and I've never heard of that person because I don't follow that specific world, but that doesn't mean that their fantasy about that person is any less intense. And to me, that is kind of a metaphor or the same thing about any aspect of sex. Someone could think, like you said, toe sucking is just like the height of erotic pleasure or getting your toes sucked. And someone else could think, oh, I would never do that. And you could probably do right. the same for anything. And I think that's what makes erotica really interesting. And I think a good erotica story, you don't need to share that kink or fetish or whatever in your real life to relate to the story, to be turned on by the storytelling of it. You know, I think that a good story should be able to draw readers who it doesn't matter what you're going into it, you know, with you should be able to relate to those characters for the length of that story and get into it. And to me, those are the kinds of stories that really get me, because especially as an editor, I've written a lot of varied stories, but there's only so many things that I'm going to write about. But as an editor, I get to read and publish people who are writing about things that I would never even think to write up. Like, they would never occur to me because my mind just doesn't work like that. So that's kind of, I feel like I get the best of both worlds, because I get to write my own stories, but also see what other people are coming up with and mix them all together in a book.
Listen, I always say I love my job, and I can't imagine you saying anything different. I can only imagine you going, I love my job. I get to get turned on by myself, and I get to get turned on by other people's erotica. It's like, who would have dreamed of that? It's so great. It's really so great. I always tell people that my high school guidance counselor did not tell my parents that I was going to become a tantra master. You know, like anything but. He told my mother to force me into math.
Wow.
You know, and I was like, no. So I love my life, and I, you know, and you sound very much like you love yours as well.
Yeah, I've always said to myself that if I get bored writing erotica or editing it, then I'll stop and do something else. But it stays interesting for me because it can be a challenge, and I love coming up with new story ideas. And sometimes, actually a lot of the time, I'd say those ideas find me. Like, they
right.
come to me when I'm walking around or traveling
right.
or at off times when I'm not necessarily sitting at my computer. And I think that would make a great story. I love to eat
so good.
And just, I'll hear a snippet of a sentence and think, oh, that's perfect.
That's wonderful. Well, we're going to take a short break here. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you some questions about how you select stories for anthologies and topics, other things that have to do with the actual work that you're doing. Just give some thought while we're on break for a minute to, if somebody wanted to write erotica, how would you give them, how would you tell them to start? So that's a major question that I have for you, because I want this show to inspire people to take themselves once again beyond their limits. I want them to take themselves to more happiness and more sex. And if it means writing about it, I want them to know how to start. So when we come back, that's what we'll be talking about. I am talking today with Rachel Kramer Bussell, and she is a writer of erotica and an editor of over 50 anthologies of erotica. And as she told us before she got into it, because she wrote her own erotic story about Monica Lewinsky, which is like Monica Lewinsky became her muse. So when we come back, I'll be talking more with Rachel about that and how you can not only get her anthologies, but also how you can write if you're so inspired by us being your muse today. My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra Safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We're back from break with Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and today I'm interviewing somebody who holds real interest for me, real spark for me, real inspiration for me. Her name is Rachel Kramer Bussell, and she is the editor of over 50 anthologies, including The Big Book of Orgasms, which is her latest book, and that's how I actually heard about her and got in touch with her, because, of course, The Big Book of Orgasms appealed to me, as I'm sure you know. Rachel, so far what you've been talking about is excellent, because it brings it down to a personal level and it doesn't make it sound like it's so out of touch of people. One, they can read erotica and get pleasure from that. And two, they can write erotica about a famous person or about some fantasy that they have or whatever. So how would you say to people that they could get started?
Well, I think one of the great things about erotica is that you can write about literally anything. And if you can find a way to turn whatever it is you're writing about into something erotic, you know, really, that means everything in your house, everything that you see outside, you know, every time you're stuck in traffic, you could write a story about someone who's stuck in traffic and flirting with the person in the car next to them. And I love when people turn something that in real life could be not so fun, like you're stuck in traffic or something's going wrong, or, you know, and you turn it into an erotic story, which, you know, maybe it wouldn't really happen in real life, but it can be fun to fantasize about. And it can also, you know, help brighten your day when you're having a bad day. So I think that a lot of people do sort of like what I did, where I wrote about something that was a real fantasy for me. And then the next few stories I wrote were largely based on things that I had done. But the great thing about erotica is it's not a memoir. You're not writing an essay where you're beholden to exactly what happened and you have to remember everything. You have the freedom to take something that happened to you or that you heard about. It doesn't have to have happened to you, but if I think that's a lot of people's first place that they go when they're writing erotica initially. But then you have the freedom to tweak it, to turn it around. You know, maybe you were 20 and the other person was 40 or whatever, but maybe you want to write it from the perspective of the person who was 40 and get into their head and play around with it. And I also really like the chance to put on disguises as a fiction writer. And in that, I can be all these kinds of people that I can't be in real life. I'm not going to have all kinds of jobs, and I'm not going to become a different gender, but through writing, I can do those things. And I think that for me, when I stretch, I've written a lot of stories inspired by my life, and I sometimes still do. And I enjoy that process, but I also really like when I write about a character who's totally different from me, who is maybe they're a different gender or age, or they live somewhere else. And I can still tap into what turns them on. And that's the part that I think that we all share, even if they're into something different sexually than me or their lifestyle is different than me. I think there is still a common humanity, and that's what you want to tap into when you're writing erotica. And I always tell people, you want to use all the senses, because I think sometimes people think an erotica story is a sex story or a sex scene, and they just describe what happens when the people are having sex. But I think that you need to get the reader to a point where they care about who these people are and why they're having sex and what about that scene makes it a story. That doesn't mean you have to go in linear order. You can start with a sex scene, but you really want to talk about also why the people are there and who they are to each other and how this is different than other times they've had sex. I mean, you don't have to get into every one of those details, but the more sensualness you can add to it and details about just who these people are and what is bringing them together at that moment, like what's so urgent about what they're doing, I think the more memorable your story is going to be and just more powerful. So
that's great. That is such, all of that is such great advice. I just feel like I'm talking to a real pro. I'm talking to a real writing pro. It sounds like also that you could direct a film, do you know? Like you're looking at it from the different perspectives and how to build something so that people care about the characters. And that's what, to me, that's what makes it erotic and different from porn. You know, like caring about what happens to the characters and that they actually have personalities and that there's actually involvement in the story. That's precisely for me what makes it erotic rather than pornographic.
And I think that's also how you can make the reader want to know about someone who maybe they wouldn't want to be friends with that person or do what that person is going to do, but they're going to follow that character into that story and want to know why they're doing the thing they're doing next. Like I said before, I think you can eroticize anything. And I think that goes for, you know, you can write about all kinds of different sex acts if that's what you want to do. Some people, they're not necessarily interested in writing about all sorts of fetishes, or all sorts of couples. Like they want to, maybe they only want to write about one couple and maybe all their stories are going to follow that couple or that person into different adventures. And that you can do as well. It's really up to you. But I do think that if you're looking to publish your stories, which we can talk about more, the more you can diversify, you know, the more different types of characters you can write about, the more chances you're going to have to get published, because there's all sorts of calls. Sometimes it's for any gender, sometimes it's just lesbian or just gay stories, or sometimes they're paranormal or whatever it is. I think the broader influences you can bring into your writing, just the more markets you'll be able to sell your work to. And I also think it can be a really good challenge to write from a different gender or a different sexual orientation, because it forces you out of your own head in a way. It forces you out of your own experience and into this other character's experience. And I think it can be, some people find it hard to do that. You know, maybe because they're used to writing about their own lives, or they're just used to thinking from their own perspective, especially about sex. So I think that can be a really good exercise to do, whether you're starting out or you've been writing erotica, to either change the point of view or, you know, just think about, if you have a story, say, with a man and a woman and you're telling it from the woman's point of view, think about what is the man's point of view? Because even if you're not going to write your story from the man's point of view, I think you still want to get his perspective in there. Maybe it's reflected from hers. You know, maybe it's what she thinks he's thinking.
That's great. Well, let's talk a little bit now about your book of orgasms. So how many pieces are in there, and what will people get from it, and how can they get it? And I'm excited about it.
Thank you. My newest book is called The Big Book of Orgasms, 69 Sexy Stories. And I know that sounds like a lot, 69, which it is, but they're all very short. They're 1,200 words or less. So you can read them, you know, in 5-10 minutes. And I really like that format. It can be challenging to the writers to compress their story into such a short space, But for me as an editor, I love that I get to publish 69 stories, whereas most of my books have 20 to 25 stories. And I also like that I get to cover all, I mean, it's not going to be every single possible permutation of orgasm you could have, but there are a lot of different types of them and types of characters. And there's masturbation stories. There's a story where a woman's turned on by not wearing underwear and having tight jeans press against her. I wrote about hot wax,
nice.
Sex toys, and there's just really a lot of variety, and that I appreciate, and I think a lot of people appreciate, because it's kind of like, you mentioned porn earlier, it's kind of like when you're watching porn and you fast forward to the action, like these have just compressed all the action. I mean, they're full stories within the 1,200 words, but they don't have any extra stuff going on. You know, they kind of just get right to the point. And it's funny because I would say the biggest criticism I get is that people say, oh, but these stories are good. I wanted to know what happened next. I don't think that's a bad thing, you know?
No, if they want to know what happened next, you have the next anthology all ready to go.
I think for people who like a lot of variety and just want new kinds of ideas and just different voices.
Yeah, beautiful.
This is a really great book, and it's definitely one that I would recommend. You know, whatever you're into, you'll probably find reflected somewhere in the book, because a lot of my books are about spanking or bondage, and it's much more specific of a niche. And so if you're not into spanking at all, then you're probably not going to like a book about spanking. But I do think that sometimes people don't necessarily think they're going to like a thing, but if they read the right story, they can get into that story. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you want to do it in real life. And going back to the...
No, you just want to read about it. That's fine. Who cares?
And maybe you want to write about it. I mean, I think that's one thing that sometimes holds people back. They think, well, how can I write about this thing if I've never done it? Or how can I write about this? Will this change me? Will that mean that I'm into bondage if I write about bondage? And I think you can definitely write about things you haven't done. You know, we're lucky that we have the internet, which means you can research, you can look at photos of people tied up, or you can watch videos. You can go on, say, FetLife, which is a kinky social networking site, and look at what people are talking about. Or you could ask advice, like what kind of rope would you use to tie someone up in this situation? And then that's where I was saying before, that it's not just the physical action of tying someone up. It's then what happens, what are the emotions involved, how does it feel to tie someone up, like there's that power exchange going on. I think that's the part that you don't need to have done it to think about, how would that feel to be that person in that situation.
Yeah, point well taken, really well taken. Well, how do people get this book, The Big Book of Orgasms? What's the best way for them to get it?
You can go to my website, rachelkramerbuffel.com, where I also have a newsletter. You can follow us on Twitter at Big Book of Orgasm. And we're also on Tumblr, thebigbookoforgasms.tumblr.com. And for those who might be in San Francisco, I'm doing a reading with 9 of the authors on November 6th at Good Vibrations.
How great is that? Well, let me spell out your name so that people know exactly how to get to your website. So it's Rachel Kramer, Kramer, Bussell, Bussell.com. And there's no spaces, no dots, no hyphens. Rachel Kramer Bussell. And that's how you can find her on her website. Rachel, I have one last question for you. I know it's going to be a little tickler,
okay.
Kind of. What have your parents said about your career? You know, how do your parents feel about you writing erotica? Can they make peace with it? Are they fine with it? Or is it something they just don't understand?
I would say probably they don't necessarily understand it. It's not really their thing. Both of them are much more private than I am. But I think they're happy that I have a career that I'm happy doing.
That's so great. That's great. As I'm listening to you, I'm saying, you know, I know what I went through. And I think to myself, wow, this woman is out there. She gets to read all these fantasies and write them and whatever. And I just wondered how her parents would feel about that. I totally encourage you. That wasn't meant to like make a sting of any sort. It was just like, good for you. Go for it. Follow your bliss. Follow your sex. Follow your happiness. So happy to have had you as a guest today.
Thank you very much. I had a great time.
Yeah, I'm glad. Well, everybody stay tuned because I'm going to be interviewing Michelle Terrell next, a woman who teaches men how to be successful at dating women. Quite an amazing turnaround, a woman telling men what to do and men loving it. So she'll be right with us. We'll be right back with Sex and Happiness.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life? Get the best from relationships? Attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Lori Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Lori Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
For weeks now, you've been hearing me talk about the Eroticos Film Festival and my film Beyond Dinner winning the award for the best short film. And you've been hearing me talk to all these guests that I met while I was there. And you haven't heard that much about the dinner, although in the show I did with Dr. Ava and Nancy Sutton Pierce, we did talk about what was in my film. I want to let you know that the film is about a ritual dinner that I invented called the Gate Dinner. Gate means beyond in Sanskrit. And it's a very sensual 8-course dinner that starts with the forbidden, starts with dessert, and leads its way back around to other foods. But all the foods in the dinner are very, very sensual, very beautifully prepared, and the presentation is amazing. And in this dinner, aside from everybody projecting themselves through a meditation that I do to their highest self, having had boundary exercises prior, the men rotate around the table and they feed various goddesses, all the goddesses that are around the table. And even if you come there with a partner, the partner lets go, doesn't take things so personally, lets the partner rotate around and have a sensual experience with each person that's participating. In this case, it would be men having a sensual experience with different women and then working their way back to their original partner. If this piques your curiosity and interest, I want to let you know that these dinners are now available to you wherever you are in the United States. And what you need is 20 people who would like to participate, and you can get in touch with me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com if you'd like to host a dinner like this in your part of the world. I would love to come to your and offer one of these dinners to you and your friends, and I know my chef would love to come too. Also, Antonio Tiggs, who you've heard on the show as well, would love to come and paint your servers. So your servers are all gold or all silver or what have you. So we have a little entourage that would like to come and make this such a memorable event for you. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to hear more about it and talk about the details. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com.
Well, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Sex and Happiness, and this half of the show is not going to leave you any less excited than the first half of the show did, which was about writing erotica. My guest today on this part of the show is a personalized coach. She offers personalized coaching for men. Her name is Michelle Terrell. She is known as the Pistol Whip Hippie. Mm-hmm. She's a love life coach to those that prefer advice about this area of life to be dished out in an outrageously honest and irreverent manner. And I want you all to know that that's exactly why I was attracted to call Michelle and find out if she'd be my guest. Over the past 16 years, she's provided many men a harsh reality check and a wake-up call. And then she follows up by holding nurturing space to examine their motivations and do their personal growth work through creating deeper connections with women. She also offers programs and materials for women and couples, but her main focus really is devoted to supporting and educating the men. So, Michelle, welcome to Sex and Happiness.
Well, thank you. I love that you wanted me to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. You're a unique person. I love your irreverence and your outrageousness. And I relate to that. I totally relate to that and connect to that. And people have been telling me about you for at least a couple of years, ever since I got to Phoenix. So I am thrilled to have you as my guest.
Thank you.
So tell us, how did you wake up one day and go, I'm going to coach men?
Yeah, this is, I get this question probably more than any other question. I shot a video about it called Healing Arts, Hand Jobs, and Helping Men Get Laid. That video explains my journey from being a professional educator. All my background is in human development, child development, that sort of thing, to getting into massage therapy because I had chronic pain issues and I had trauma from my childhood I wanted to heal and work through. And I found that working it through the body was the most direct method for doing that. So I was so excited about this. And then I got into massage therapy professionally, just kind of by accident. That wasn't really my intention going to school. And I was getting solicited for sex acts for money. And I was like, oh, what is this? Okay, how can I be this naive, you know? And I realized there was this underserved segment of the population. There were men that were very much in need of a loving presence, a therapeutic presence that wasn't medical, that was truly, you know, just pouring out the love. And I wasn't sure how to do that exactly, but I got on this mission to serve this underserved segment of the population and experienced a great deal of backlash from, you know, 16, 17 years ago when I was studying. Massage therapy was trying to be seen as a legitimate medical profession, and they weren't too happy. I was really an outcast in my own healing arts school, very outcast in that community. And I started running ads where prostitutes were running their ads. And I said, I'm going to reach out, and I'm not going to be afraid, and I'm going to do this. And, of course, then the sex workers, you know, some of them got it. Others persecuted me as well. So it's been like 16 years of persecution to be able to serve this segment of the population. But my goodness, the most appreciative, loyal, amazing men have come out of this and have taught me so much. And my main education comes directly from these guys.
Wow, that's some story. I can imagine like feeling outcast. You know, maybe I can't imagine, I can't both, be feeling outcast from not only your profession, educator and massage, and then feeling like cast out also from sex workers because you developed a kind of competition that didn't have exactly what to do with what they were doing. You were offering something like in a different niche, your own niche.
Yeah, and it was interesting. It was a threat to everyone, and I thought, well, I must be onto something here. If I'm pissing everybody off, you know. So but it was hard times. It was a lot of tears, a lot of walking on campus to take my education classes to re-up my licensing, and having people whispering and going into class and having them, it really give me a hard time often. Even the business ethics class held up my ad as an example of what not to do. And so, you know, I just kept doing it. I just kept doing it. And now because of people like yourself, it's become, and Facebook has opened everything up, that communicating with each other now and finding out there were little pockets of us having these same little epiphanies, this collective consciousness push was happening. And we were all in our own little isolated worlds bravely moving forward with this. And now we can connect. And so I think there's a tipping point happening now in history about this.
Yeah, it's wonderful. The internet has provided so much. As crazy as it is,
yes,
it still has provided so much for people like us to be able to get the message out there. And I'm so glad your message is out there. So tell us a little bit about this message. I mean, you have a website and you have classes called under the name theattractionstudio.com. And so what really is the bottom line? You get a group of men together and then what? In your irreverent, outrageous way, then what?
Yeah, I worked for many years just quietly, one human being at a time. And that's the most potent, powerful way to do it, of course. And then the economy dipped 4 years ago, and that pushed me into, hey, you've got skills to be a teacher in a classroom situation. Why don't you invent some classes? And never in my life did I think I would be teaching classes called, you know, how to spot a freak, you know, the good kind, or how to get your balls out of her purse. And so I just started making up these things based on what the guys told me. And, you know, I've always seen my mission as a facilitator of world peace, and not to overstate that at all. I mean, I really, that's always been in my heart of hearts what I feel like I'm doing. If men have better clarity around their relationships with themselves, they have a greater ability to connect with women and have less frustration and stress about that. How could this not pay off for the world?
You know, I have to just say something in here. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I always have said that if the men who flew the planes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were sexually satisfied and happy in their relating, especially their sexual relating with their burqa wearing partners, really, they would not have like needed to fly off and do something like that. Like really happy, satisfied people would not have that vendetta. They wouldn't, no one could motivate them to fly a plane that way on a suicide mission.
Yeah, there's nothing you could pay someone, nothing you could bribe someone with if they are truly free in that way.
Right.
I thought that too. I love to hear that there's someone else that thinks kooky thoughts like that. I thought that too, the repression. And of course, I live in Mesa, Arizona, which
is
the capital of repression. It's a, you know, it's a very high people that are involved with repressive
religion
living here.
And
yeah, it's a very fascinating place to put to do this work. Like, okay, witch hunt at any moment could happen. But I absolutely hear you on that. That there's that repression of deep joy that is attached to being humble and the salt of the earth and in service of God somehow. And I don't get it. I don't get how God dwells there. But other people don't get how God can dwell in a class that I'm teaching about how to spot a freak, you know?
Right.
You know, it's just we're all on our own little path with this and can impact who we impact. And I've made my peace with that. I've got my little corner of the universe here and some level of influence, and I'm going to use it as wisely as possible.
And it's growing. Your corner is growing, so.
Yes. It's growing.
Yeah, your
corner is great growing. Influence comes great responsibility.
How do you get these names for your course? You wake up out of bed and you go, okay, how to get your balls out of her purse? I mean, that's kind of a unique, that's a great name for a book.
Yeah, it is. And actually a viral video, one of the coaches at the time walked out of class halfway through class. And I was like, dude, why did you leave? And he said, you'll see. So a few months later, he invited me to a concert. And he'd written a song. A mock love song called My Balls Are in Her Purse. So, and that's a viral video. He's an East Indian rock star, and it's a big song right now. So it's that just kind of came to me. It just, mm-hmm. after talking, I mean, really, it's not, I'm not going to take any credit for that. It was born out of talking to a lot of men. all with pretty much the same story.
Yeah, tell it. What is that story? What is that story? All the same story. They're powerless. They feel powerless, right?
They don't feel like they feel ineffectual in the world and their lives. They don't think anything that they're doing really actually matters or affects anything. And that's really all stemming from their sexless marriages. The majority of my clients come from Backpage. I've run an ad mm-hmm. there for 16 years. And mm-hmm. I am a licensed massage therapist, but that's not my focus. It's helping men that are starving to death for female acceptance, attention. Their worth and their value has gotten very caught up in that, and they'll take it any way they can get it. And now with a high-speed internet, I'm seeing my guys that are under 30. I never believed there was an arousal addiction issue, but I do now because it's almost like a physical, like a heroin addiction kind of thing going on. So we have just my main client base are sexually dead marriage guys. And what I do from my main work in my private practice is helping married men take their wives, which, you know, we could get into the controversy of my whole theory on long-term and short-term contract prostitutes, but their long-term contract prostitutes, which I could explain, and converting them into sex kittens. Because there's this whole nice guy syndrome, good girl syndrome, and those people get married, and then they have these very neutered, neutralized sex lives or no sex life at all. And the statistic that I often use, and I'm shocked, you know, I was just shocked when I heard, is 80% of American marriages are reporting being sexually dissatisfied. 60% of those are considered clinically sexually dead. And This is disturbing to me on every level.
Yeah.
Disturbing that you can go to Tempe Improv and hear a comedian pull a joke about no more blowjobs after you get married and everybody laughs because everyone can relate. He's not going to say that joke unless everybody can relate in the room, you know? And I think that makes me so sad. It's not funny.
Exactly.
Horrible.
Well, we're gonna stop here for a moment. We're gonna take a brief pause, and when we come back from this pause, I want to go even more deeply into this. I actually do want you to talk about the long-term prostitutes, paid prostitutes, which I know you mean wives, and really how you do it, how one tip or two tips about how you turn these men into someone that could turn these women on.
Yeah.
So, okay. Yeah, that's great. So we'll be right back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And I think we're at one of the cores of the heart of the matter here, talking about 80% unhappy marriages, 60% being clinically unhappy based on, like, no sex life. So my guest, Michelle Terrell, will be with us as soon as we get back again. And I hope you're sitting on the edge of your chair as you're listening to this.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lottie Hahn CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
Well, sit on the edge of your chair no longer. We're back with Sex and Happiness. I'm Lori Handlers, your host, and today I'm interviewing Michelle Terrell, who runs the attractionstudio.com. And she really does personalized coaching for men. And what I found out in this interview is that mostly they're married men, and they're married men who are having really sexless or almost sexless unhappy marriages. So Michelle, we were going there before we went to break. We were talking, you mentioned and said you could explain a little bit more about how you see wivery, as it's not the first time I've had that topic on here. I just want to let you know, like, we have talked about it before, but really long ago. Let's just be brief about it, because I want to also get into the meat of, like, what are some of the tips that you give these men to turn these women on?
Okay.
So there's some bargain, there's some exchange of power and money and energy that goes on when people get married. What is that?
Yeah, I mean, getting married means sharing resources. Nothing inherently evil about that. It's just, it makes it challenging, I think, to keep it straight, whether you want to or you're in a sense of obligation. I have an article, one of my blogs, very popular. There are only three types of women. And I'm shocked at how many women are going, right on, this is good stuff. And I'm like, yay. There are sluts, there are whores, and there are prostitutes. And there are three types of prostitute: a Backpage Craigslist kind of prostitute, a sugar baby, and a wife.
Okay.
And I would consider myself a high-quality monogamous slut. So there is no amount of money, like we were talking about earlier, about if you're in joy and you're in bliss, you're not going to, there's no amount of money that can get you to do things that are out of your angst and your repression, because there is none. I will never, ever, ever have sex for money. I will never do that because I require my security needs to be met through seduction, through a man putting his, helping me put my guard down. That's what I require. Right. So I do require something, but it's that. If I choose to share resources with man and our purposes cross, cool. But my motivation for having sex is about, I want sex and I want great sex. A whore has sex for low self-esteem reasons, and she may be a wife, she may be a prostitute, you know, but that her motivation is that. A prostitute, you take the money away, she's not going to do it. There's no motivation to do it. And, you know, mm-hmm. this gets really kind of convoluted, because when you get married often have children, so you're sharing resources. If a man just stopped providing for his family, yeah, that would be good cause to not want to be with him. However, my point being that your motivation, and keeping your motivation for having sex pure, requires you to involve yourself in creating motivation for him to want to protect and provide for you, and for him to provide motivation for her to want to bring her nurturing feminine gifts, including her body, including her touch. So, you know, that kind of segues us into, what do I do to help guys convert this obligatory way of living that they may have gotten themselves into for a variety of reasons? It seems like it's a lot of the same reasons in their marriages. And then how do we turn that around? We got to take the obligation out, and we have to increase the wanting to, the motivation.
Okay, that's good. I mean, that sounds great in theory.
Uh-huh.
First of all, I like everything that you said before. Anyway, I just want to give you, you know, atta girl, I love what you said about prostitutes, whores, and sluts.
Yeah, it's a brief version. There's a more in-depth, you know.
I'm sure. But it's important that people hear this, because they have to question their own motives. What are they doing?
Exactly.
What are they doing in relationship? Like, really, are they trading their sexuality for security? Like, really? Why? That doesn't make anything secure. And now the sexuality, it loses its fun, its spark, its turn on, its excitement, the whole reason that it's meant to have to be sexuality. So,
and it's a particular problem today, which is why my audio workshop is that you can do in home study is called How to Handle Today's Woman. There is a shift that happened with regard to financial independence that women have now. And why do we need to try to get a man to protect and provide for us? If we don't understand that, it gets really twisted.
Got it.
It turns into manipulation. And women aren't even wanting to be manipulative. They're not even wanting to do this. They just don't understand. They don't have clarity around their motivations and their instinctual drives around why they're going into this place of pushing for stuff, for tokens.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not engaged with a woman, she'll try to get an engagement ring. You know, if you're not being deep with her, she will want stuff. It's
right.
She doesn't know.
Right.
She's like,
Right. If she's not getting the depth that fulfills her need for intimacy, then she wants material things to ensure that, like, at least you get that.
Yeah, and it's not...
I totally get that. I call that... I'm a part of a community we call that female bitch chemistry.
Yes.
So... And women are involved in it, and they don't even know. It's like it's age... It's passed down genetically, and then it gets, you know, and then it gets tempered by whatever decade.
Yeah, culturally reinforced. And we've all done it. I've done it. I've been married. I pushed for rings and a lease and a car and a dog together. And, you know, but I didn't know. I didn't know what I wanted was a depth of presence. I didn't know.
Yeah, I have to just tell you, I haven't done it.
Oh, well.
I never did it.
You popped out of the womb kind of ready to go, huh?
I don't know. I just was different. I just felt I saw that really early in my mother. Like, I felt like she gave over her entire being to a crazy person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I loved my father, but he was really crazy, and he wasn't like a person that you hand your nervous system and all your decision making capabilities and your brilliance over to. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why is this woman doing this? You know, I had an up close and personal view of how can you like surrender your whole being to this lunatic?
Right.
And so I said, I'm never going to surrender my whole being to any lunatic. You know, like, he might be a great lunatic, but I'm not, there's nothing that could get me to sell myself out. Granted, I haven't always had great experiences in my dating or intimate life. I've certainly hit my head against brick walls and have had my share of abuse and other things, but I knew I wasn't doing that.
Yeah, I guess I knew that too, but I still tried it on for size.
Yeah,
because it's what the culture said I was supposed to do.
Exactly.
What do you do next? This is the age you're at. This is the stage in the relationship you're at. You've been together a year. Now you do this. Now you do, you know, so I don't think this is a man-woman thing. I think this is a cultural thing. And I think we're at a tipping point, like I said, that this is going to shift because we're ready for an upgrade.
Excellent.
Do something different.
Excellent.
And I don't think, you know, you're in leadership on this. A lot of women are stepping up to their radiance and their this whole goddess movement and all of that. It's not a time where women have to shun their femininity, their beauty, their light, their glittery fun stuff. You can be all these sexy, amazing things now and still be credible. So you don't have to be cave girl that's all involved with glamour and beautification, over beautification, and the only thing that makes you feel secure is brute strength and money. And you don't have to be all over identified with your intellect. And I'm going to have smell like patchouli and have armpit hair and not color my hair. You know, it's like this extreme thing. Like, I could never fit anywhere. But now there's this integrated female, and I'm my work is about helping men integrate and overcome some of their fear that, you know, and I don't want to blame feminism. I don't want to get on that. I consider myself the new feminism, but there was this rejection of all of that and this idea that being equal meant the same and this surrender myself to and being surrendered. Like, you don't do that. You don't do that. You don't surrender to anybody because we saw these examples of men being brutish and women being kowtowing and nobody wants that. And but there's a new way to do this. And so that's what I teach men, how to be in their own power, truly not be a bully, not be a douchebag. But there are some qualities of the douchebag that you can look at and study and go, well, these guys that have it so figured out, they have some front-end game that maybe you want to adopt to buy yourself some time to and some influence with this woman so that she'll be motivated to spend more time with you and figure out who you really are. So for my guys that are single and dating, you know, that's the piece. For my married guys turning their sexually dead marriage around, it's reestablishing authority in their household. So not being a brutish, you know, bully, but to have a commanding presence, to stop deferring their authority over to their woman, because we'll do it. We can do both jobs.
Right.
We're burdened. We're frustrated. We're shut down. We burn out. if that's how it goes. And so I help them see that in their attempts to be so equal, and they're actually schlepping off their responsibilities as head of the household, as leadership. And that's why you can't say, suck my dick and she'll drop to her knees and do it. You don't have any authority with your woman. Why would she do that? you're not.
Yeah, right. You have to, basically you're teaching them how to grow their balls back.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Women don't want him anyway. Women just act like they want him. This is called testing to see how he's going to handle when I act like this. Are you going to help manage me and help me be stable? You don't need a fat wallet to get girls. You need to know how to be a calm presence in her life and help her stabilize so she can stay in her right mind, so she can make great choices and be awesome in the world.
Wonderful. Michelle Terrell, so happy to know you, so happy to have you as my guest. It's a fresh, unique niche that you're in, and it's a wonderful one. It's needed and necessary.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you bringing your value to this conversation and my work.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure. There's nothing I like more than men with balls.
Yes, every woman does. We might buck like wild ponies a little bit at first, but we're just checking,
No, they have to have their command. I already have a command and a presence. I always have since I came out the chute. And maybe that's also why I couldn't go with, I'm going to now surrender up who I am to somebody that knows less than me and has less power than me. I always had that power. But I have to interact with men who are powerful. And when they're not, I want to cry. I just want
to. Oh, it's so hard for us to be around that. And really powerful women need an even stronger. I always say you got to be more fly than your girl. You got to be more alive than your girl. You got to just be a little bit more, not a lot more. I'll be all in her face like I'm better than you. But it's just, you got to be a little more awesome than your girl, at least slightly.
Yeah.
And that's how it works best. And really powerful women like us, my mother says I came out of the womb with a martini in one hand and a cigarette in the other, and then I started ordering the doctors around. So I feel you on that.
It's great.
Yeah, and that's the rare man these days that can really hold and be captivating to a woman like us. And yet we're the women men desire and want. So let's teach them how to do that.
Perfect. Beautiful. I'm sending every man I know to you. Anyway, let's tell people again how to get in touch with you. I want you to know that Michelle's website is Michelle Terrell, and her website is theattractionstudio.com. It's all one word, theattractionstudio.com. And you can find out about her home study workshop entitled
How to Handle Today's Woman, a three-step system by Michelle Terrell. Steps. It sounds simple.
Beautiful. You don't have to do 12 steps. No. How wonderful is that? So, Michelle, thank you for being my guest today. Everyone out there, a word to the wise here. If you're a woman who's unhappy in your sexless relationship, you want to get this home study course if you're out there in the world and you're not in the Arizona, Phoenix, Scottsdale area, Mesa, Tucson, not even Tucson is, if you're not in that area, then you want to get online and you want to get this course for your man. And if you're a man who heard this, because at least 40% of my listeners are men, and you feel like you need to grow bigger balls, then you better get online and get this course from Michelle. That's all there is to it. You owe it to yourself. It's your birthright to have hot, wonderful, great sex and to feel empowered in your relationships.
Amen.
So that's my two cents on the subject. Anyway, Michelle, thanks so much for being my guest. Everyone out there, this is Laurie Handlers. I'm going to be signing off now for Sex and Happiness. Thanks for listening today. And we'll be back next time with another amazing show.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Lori and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Lori's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to know-